Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt on Podcast One.
The new Super Beats Heart Chews Advanced is now supercharged with CoQ10. Support your healthy CoQ10 levels and blood pressure with 2 chews a day. Visit RadioBeats.com and save 15% with promo code DEAL.
Yeah, true car. Every car comes with its share of stories. What's the story of your car, and then how do we put a price on that story? Well, let's see if we can figure this out. I mean, can't put a price on your personal stories, but when it comes to your car, TrueCar can figure out what those stories are worth as it pertains to your car. So just go to TrueCar, enter your car's license plate number, and watch how your car's details come popping up. Then you answer a few easy questions like, does it have navigation? Does it have a moonroof? So on and so forth. Watch as they bump up the value. What about the mileage? Is it high mileage? All these things factor in. And then we figure out what your car is worth. Once you're finished, you'll get a true cash offer sent to you in minutes, which you can take to your local certified dealer to cash out, or you can trade in your car. So when you're ready to experience a better way to sell or trade in your car, true car today.
This is Corolla Digital. This is Reasonable Doubt with your hosts, Mark Garagus and Adam Carolla.
Yeah, get it on. Got to get it on. No choice but to get on, Mindy. Get it on and welcome to the best hour or so in the universe. It's Reasonable Doubt. I'm Adam Carolla. That's Mark Garagus. Where? Still in New York?
Still in New York. And for the first time since we've been doing this, and how long have we been doing this? Almost 200 episodes?
Yeah.
Yeah, 3 years. The best hour or couple of hours in the universe wasn't now, but was earlier this week on Monday night. Wouldn't you agree?
Boy, brother, the odyssey that I was on the last 4 or 5 days, and none of it included dinner, and going out with you and Ben and Drew and having a martini and some wine and some steak. It's just, for me, there's nothing better. There's nothing better. And it's the right company and the right steakhouse. And screw the steakhouse. Just sitting next to Mark while he's holding court, nothing better. So
could not have been better, I mean, I'm telling you. And then luckily for us, Ben came over. And he came by for the dessert tray, I think, and announced that he had just settled a case in principle. It was all in all a good day.
It was a good day. And thank you once again for your generosity. It was delectable.
I won't tell you what client paid for it, but pretty funny. So wait,
yeah.
You know what? The first thing I want to talk about, because Gary had an epiphany. Gary, do you want to tell Adam your epiphany right before we came on the air
about
Robert Kraft?
Oh, about Robert Kraft. Yeah, Ace, I don't know if you've been seeing the same sort of headlines that I have, but the way I interpreted the Robert Kraft news was that the video was not going to be used. It was going to not come out, and it would not be used. But what in effect happened in their suppressing the video is they suppressed all of everything, and Robert Kraft is no longer on the hook for anything.
Yeah, it's an outstanding result. And, you know, interestingly, they said that, you know, because it's been reported in various ways. And if you read the order, one way it was reported is they said, well, they misrepresented to the magistrate the, that sneak and peek installation of the video. They said human trafficking and it wasn't. No, that isn't what he said. And then they said, well, it was because or Kraft had no standing. No, they said Kraft had an expectation of privacy. What the judge said is that they did not make the sufficient attempts to minimize, which is the legal equivalent of saying, hey, if you're advertising for ladies and you're to get a massage and you're advertising for men to get a massage and you're interested in the rub and tug or the tug and rub, then why are the detectives watching the videos of the women who come in there and disrobe? And it was Gary, I think, read the order, and it's a pretty devastating order.
Yeah,
I've always felt the same way. I felt the same way with the Heidi Fleiss thing. I'm just very tired of the government and the government being, you know, pardon the pun, deputized to do whatever they want and then doing whatever they want with impunity. It's I don't like it. Like, to me, when Obama got the IRS to go after, you know, conservatives or something, and there's versions of it all over the place, it's scary. Like, I don't like us getting involved with wars we don't need to get involved with, but when we take government entities, whether it's local police stations or FBI or CIA or the IRS, and sort of turn them on taxpayers, that's scary to me.
Well, we've talked about it a couple of times because I've had a couple of these cases over the years. I had one notably in Santa Monica and then another one that a buddy of mine tried in L.A. And the one in Santa Monica, I'll never get over. The guy sees, you know, he's part of the Vice Squad. And I always loved the Vice Squad. There was a judge in L.A. County, Red Stromwell, said that when he was a cop and assigned to the Vice Squad, he never wanted to arrest someone for something he would do himself. And these guys are like, okay, we're going to out-call massage. We're going to put out-call massage out of business. So they call the client and make an appointment for an out-call massage, which involves getting a blowjob. And the guy literally gets the blowjob. And then proceeds to arrest the woman after he gets the blowjob. And I called the city attorney. I said, this is seriously what we're prosecuting and using our resources for? The cop got a blowjob, ejaculated, and then you arrest my client? It's incomprehensible.
When the law enforcement is used for almost anything other than protecting the public safety, it drives me nuts. I don't like the dime bags of weed. I was driving here today. A cop, you know, the exchange from the 2 to the 134 freeway when you're coming from where we live. Cop had a guy, highway patrol, had a guy pulled over in the middle on the bank, but in the middle of this sweeping right turn, like everyone was slowing down and hitting the brakes hard. Like, I'm sure the guy was going downhill and was doing 71 in a 55. Either way, stop with the taxpayers' harassment. So, all right. I don't want to get too angry. I got many things. We got Jussie Smollett. We got the whole dump with Trump, the Trump dump, info dump. Everyone's going nuts. We were talking for many, many months about the worm turning in terms of Trump now going after the people that were going after him. The stuff has been coming in little dribs and drabs, but it's starting, you know what? It's starting to happen. I'll put it to you this way. The little bits of information with, you know, Trump claiming he was spied on, like at first it was laughable. And then there's like little bits and pieces like the Lisa Page thing and, you know, like little couple of texts here and there. It's now these little mosaic tiles that have just been sort of blowing in. It's starting to form a picture. Like, now it's a little bit recognizable. When the last few months, it was like, oh, yeah, she did this, or he sent that text then, but there's really nothing here. It's starting to form something. I don't know what your take is on that.
Well, I think I mentioned last week, I poo-pooed it all along. The, you know, they originally, I think, assigned, or it was originally assigned to a prosecutor out of Utah. Now it's been recently reassigned or additionally assigned, or the primary focus is a U.S. attorney in Connecticut. It's an interesting turn of events, and kind of exactly what Trump was saying that we're going to originally he was saying we're going to investigate the investigators. And the problem with that, I suppose, is that when we were talking about Barr and the testimony before the Senate, one of the things that I wholeheartedly agreed with him is when you shouldn't weaponize the criminal justice system for political purposes. And so I temper any enthusiasm, because anybody who does criminal defense, you always want to challenge the nature of the investigation. You want to challenge the origins of the investigation. I mean, that's just criminal defense 101. You want to, if you can challenge the assumptions under the investigation, that's part of what your duty is, to zealously defend somebody. So it makes sense. But at the end of the day, you don't want to, as Barr said, weaponize it for political purposes. If he wants to find out and get to the bottom of it, and obviously something happened there that caused the OIG, which is the Office of Inspector General in the DOJ, to take action against McCabe. So I don't have all of that because I'm sure it's redacted because it's a personnel file. But the lion's share of what happened there, or what the accusation was that he was not truthful to the investigators at the time. And I know there was some back and forth, and I'm sure that's where they've started. Where that ended is where they're beginning this, to see exactly what happened, who went where, and what exactly was the motivations for doing it. But temper that with, it shouldn't be weaponized for political purposes.
What is, Gary, what's Trump doing as of recently? He said he's just going to put all the information out there. Obviously, everyone on MSNBC is very upset about this, but I'm not sure what he's doing that got them. I mean, I know they don't like when he does anything, but I'm saying, what's the objection to what he's doing by just dumping all the information out there? Are they saying he's going to put people in harm's way, or what's the argument against the information being out there?
Well, they're saying it's a corrupt act, as that's the talking point that seems to be repeated, but I'm not.
What's corrupt about him taking the information and pushing it out there?
They're saying if it's done, I assume the part of what the obstruction statute calls for is a corrupt intent. And so when you make the argument, and this is kind of where the argument was being fought out, that the if you don't believe the investigation is legitimate, or you don't believe there's an underlying crime, that it's very hard to prove that there's a corrupt intent. It's just fighting back against something that you feel itself is unjust. So now somebody's trying to turn that, the argument is turning on its, what he's doing is making it a corrupt act so that you can show the intent.
So it's
they're also saying when you dive a little deeper into it, they're basically insinuating that because he's giving power to Barr to release information, that that enables and empowers Barr to release things politically motivated, you know, to hold back portions that may, you know, show balance or whatever, and that it would give him a political tool that he could use under the guise of being transparent.
Well, Barr is, I was watching a little, I don't know, MSNBC or CNN. He's just full blown. He's Trump's butt boy now, like, according to anybody on CNN. Like, Barr's just doing his bidding 100%. I don't know what your take on Barr is, Mark. He's had a
stellar reputation from back in the 90s. Actually, before that, you know, this first go around, I thought that his testimony in front of Congress, I know this differs from a lot of people of my political persuasion, but I understood what he was saying. I until I hear from Mueller, and I know there's all kinds of people who want to jump his ass because they say that he wasn't truthful when he talks about Mueller, but this is somebody who's worked with Bob Mueller for 30 years. And so they go back. So I would want to hear what Mueller says before I would want to make the claim that he didn't tell the truth. I think that's the only fair thing that you can say. I mean, there's no question the guy's a real lawyer, and has a pedigree and a background that is substantial and substantive and serious. So, you know, to just denigrate him as the butt boy, I think, on the left is not to give him his due. I mean, it's, you know, there the right used to say the exact same thing about Holder as being Obama's wingman. And I think Holder even said at one point, I'm his wingman, and they jumped all over that. So there is a, and remember, if you're old enough like you or me, you remember when John F. Kennedy appointed his brother as attorney general. So there's no better wingman than to have your little brother as the attorney general. So there's a rich tradition in America of using the attorney, the office of attorney general, as somebody who kind of sees eye to eye with you.
So in a nutshell, because I'm confused, they did a 2-year investigation. Mueller report didn't really have substantial findings. And Adam Schiff and company are still, they went from sort of jogging down the war path to sprinting down the war path. And I'm confused as a taxpayer and as a man with only a high school education. What now they've supersized their ire and their conviction in terms of collusion, or now Barr is covering up for Mueller, but we don't have the information, but he released all the information. What exactly is going on? Like, I mean, what would Adam Schiff say if I said, like, what is your argument? I'm confused. The report's been
Adam. Yeah, this
delivered.
Is what he would say. Mueller has, as special counsel, which we've explained before is different than the old statute, was independent counsel. The special counsel has a restricted mandate. He's supposed to look into collusion and whether it affected the campaign and the election. And then, and you noticed he did this, he referred back to U.S. attorneys for things that were outside of his mandate. That wouldn't have been the case back in the days of Ken Starr and his predecessor at the independent counsel, or Lawrence Walsh, in a previous scandal with Iran-Contra. They had kind of a wide-ranging portfolio that could almost go anywhere. They were almost like an inspector general without any bounds. Special counsel is more limited. Now, the special counsel did, and I thought wrote at least the portions that I was able to read, a nuanced interpretation, said, look, as to obstruction, these are the 10 or 11 areas that we find or looked at for President Trump and whether he obstructed. And there were, out of those 10 or 11, there were probably three that they found that they could not exonerate. And they said, we can't exonerate. They also drew the conclusion and said, look, the idea of indicting a sitting president, and mind you, Mueller's portfolio, his mandate, is under the Department of Justice. He's basically an employee of the Department of Justice. The Department of Justice has a legal analysis, and that's not necessarily binding on a court, but it's certainly strong guidance for a Department of Justice employee. And it says that you can't indict a sitting president. And the basis for that, in very simplistic terms, is that you can't have somebody undoing an election, that would be the province of Congress. Congress has an impeachment pursuant to the Constitution. So Mueller did say, these are things that are best left to Congress. We're not weighing in on this. This is for Congress. So Schiff would tell you, okay, at this point, we're going to do what Mueller has prescribed. And he said it would be up to Congress to go after this. Now, Trump has said, and is taking the position, Don McCann, who was my White House counsel at the time, who spoke to Mueller, I'm not letting him go in front of Congress. I'm not going to honor the subpoenas. I'm not going to let. And he's saying, I've been exonerated of collusion, so therefore, this is a witch hunt. Congress would take the argument, or make the argument, no, that's not the case, that they're saying that they couldn't make a criminal recommendation, that Rosenstein and Barr came to the conclusion that it was not criminal, but that Congress remains solely dedicated and constitutionally required to examine this conduct And that's exactly what Mueller said.
And what about Mueller being interviewed and not on camera, and his approach to him giving testimony?
Well, interestingly, and Schiff had earlier this week said that he was going to start what's called an enforcement action, that if the Department of Justice didn't turn over certain things, Congress would start an enforcement action. My reading between the lines, my guess is that would have ended up in the judiciary. So then you'd have all three branches involved, Congress trying to do or get information out of the executive, and the judiciary weighing in. So far, when they've done the judiciary weighing in on the subpoenas to Capital One and Deutsche Bank as to Trump, at the district court level, the executive branch, Trump lost. Now that's ironically in front of the District of Columbia Court, which is, I think the presiding justice is Merrick Garland, but at least he's one of the three judges. You'll remember that Merrick Garland was the justice who was nominated by Obama but never got a vote, and was subsequently replaced, or that seat was filled by Justice Gorsuch.
Mm-hmm. So what about Mueller saying, what's going on in Mueller's head? Is he going, it just feels like, it's like one of these things, like, I don't know, like Bartman, the guy who was in the stands at the Cubs game, who like just reached out, and the next thing you know, he's just become a pariah, and he can't go anywhere, and you gotta like, I don't know, Mueller just seemed like he was living a nice life, and now it's on. Like,
well,
does he regret ever making the decision to head up the investigation? And now what's he saying when he says, I don't want to do it, I don't want it televised?
You know, I thought it was interesting. Rosenstein gave a commencement speech after he retired, so it would have been within the last 10 days. And I think it was at the University of Baltimore. And he quoted Mueller, and he talked about both there and at the Armenian Bar Association the day before he left office, or a week and or 8 days before he left office. He invoked the idea of making a decision according to your principles. It may be a lonely decision. You may have colleagues that you thought were friends that turn against you, but that, you know, at the end of the day, that's the honorable thing to do. Everything that I know, and I certainly am not friends with him. We've met and crossed paths. In fact, back when he was a U.S. attorney, he seems to me to be the kind of guy who figures public service to a great extent is his life. This is what he was called to do. He doesn't, I don't think, care as much, would be my guess, about whether it was popular or not. It's kind of ironic that he goes back and forth. First, he's an angry Democrat, and he's getting embraced by the left. Then he's kind of, he was co-opted by the right. And it goes back and forth. I always say it's somewhat similar to what mediators tell me sometimes in a good mediation. If both sides are angry, it means you probably reached a good deal. And with him, if both sides are kind of angry at him, probably means he did a good job.
Why no? I'll tease it, but why does he not want it to be televised? And you can look into it, Gary, but why does he not want it to be a public forum? And why does he not want it to be televised or have cameras there? Look, I don't blame the guy. Like, it's miserable, I'm sure. But I'm trying to think what his angle is, what his excuse could be. If somebody said to him, well, why not? We put the cameras up and we talk to everybody, and that's how we do it. Why is this a closed-door situation for you? I'm curious what his answer would be. I'll let you think about it for a second. First, I'll tell you about LegalZoom. Running a small business means lots of work, time and money. When legal hurdles pop up along the way, LegalZoom is there to help. Nearly 2 million Americans have used LegalZoom to start a business with LLCs and corporation and more. But after you're set up, LegalZoom can still help. Lease agreements, changing tax laws, contract reviews, costly hurdles that take time for your, and it takes time away from growing your business. So let's let LegalZoom help out. LegalZoom created their business legal plan, advice from vetted independent attorneys and tax pros, available in all 50 states. You won't get charged by the hour. LegalZoom isn't a law firm. They're the best. They're LegalZoom, right, Gary?
That is absolutely right. Make your time and money work for you. Check out LegalZoom's business legal plan at LegalZoom.com now and get special savings when you enter doubt at checkout. LegalZoom, where life meets legal, LegalZoom.com.
So, Gary, do you have any news or any updates about Mueller? And
we're still trying to figure out why he wants to be behind closed doors, but maybe Mark has.
My guess would be that anytime you do this, there's grand jury material involved, and there's also current investigations going on. When I was talking about that, he referred out a number there of investigations. There's still prosecutions going on. There's investigations going on, and there's grand jury material. They cannot talk about that if you're involved in that. Under a specific rule. So that would be my guess, that it would look like he was invoking it. He'd be like a jack in the box. If I had to guess, and I'm not in the weeds on it, but that would be my guess, is that they talk about Rule 6E.
His complaint, his statement, rather, to the matter is that he doesn't want to participate in anything that might be regarded as a political spectacle. He views himself as apolitical, and he believes that in a public hearing that the Republicans are going to bring in political theater, and he doesn't want to participate in that.
Oh, the Republicans.
The Republicans.
I feel like the Democrats are the ones that have all the questions.
I'm sorry, I misspoke. I think there's a fear that both sides.
Oh, yeah, well, both sides are going to do it. Yeah, sure.
But you can't ever have a congressional hearing on a hot topic that doesn't have political theater. I mean, that's the going back to the Barr hearings and our complaint about the illustrious senator from Hawaii. It was like there wasn't even a question. It was just a diatribe.
Mazie Hirono was I think her name is Mazie Hirono. I have a theory about how when you put too much hair dye in, it poisons your brain. And
Mazie, that's why I'm gray haired.
Mazie Hirono is at the top of my list. Like, she's using too much Shishin formula. I don't know if there's a female version of Grecian formula, but first off, you know, it's weird. Like, there are guys I agree with, and then guys I disagree with, and gals I agree with, and gals I disagree with. But Mazie Hirono seems like an insane person. Like, I'm not a big Elizabeth Warren fan, but she seems bright and intelligent and can string a sentence together. Mazie Hirono seems like an insane person. She sounds like a homeless person.
If you took her questioning and put it next to Kamala's questioning,
right,
and for whatever you think about Kamala, she's a real trial lawyer. She was asking real questions. She was getting information. It was a pleasure to watch. The other thing was just like I wanted to come out of my skin.
Well, she's just I think when you're dumb, you don't know you're dumb, and you don't realize how you come across to intelligent people, right? So I think,
well, yeah, but then there's I'll give you the guy that I just can't figure out is Lindsey Graham. I don't understand Lindsey Graham. I mean, when John McCain was alive and they were, you know, the will and grace of the Senate, he was one guy. And I watch, they keep playing him during, and I remember him vividly during the impeachment hearings. Everything he was saying then, it was like, that was then, this is now, and it's a complete, it's like the guys say the political equivalent of Sybil.
You guys can Google that.
And he's a smart guy. There's no way you can, this is not a guy, this is not a dumb guy. Lindsey Graham is an accomplished lawyer, was a JAG lawyer, is smart, has talent, knows how to ask questions, knows how to cross-examine. It's just astonishing to me what has happened.
Well, a couple of questions, moving to another subject. I'm curious with Gary in this, speaking of, I don't know, it just popped in my head, the kid that got caught up in the whole situation on the steps, the of the Capitol blocking the Native American gentleman, and then now suing CNN and suing the Washington Post and blah, blah, blah. I have not heard anything about that case. I don't know if we're talking about settling or what the deal is.
I think that was... That's Lynn Wood's case.
Right.
We've talked about it. I keep telling Gary, and it's my fault, not Gary's. I keep meaning to reach out to Lynn and talk to him about it, because I think you would love to spend 30 minutes or 20 minutes talking to Lynn. Just the kinds of cases he takes, and he's just a solid guy. But he has, I thought I just saw something this week that he posted and that I read that was a court order overruling one of his motions, one of the motions to dismiss in response to his case. So I think he's got some wind at his back. I doubt they settle, but it's an interesting time for media outlets. I mean, the Julian Assange indictment that came out today, we're taping this on Friday, or that parts of it were revealed today, are an interesting movement towards area that we didn't go before. You know, during Obama's tenure, there were, people tend to forget this, but there were subpoenas of reporters' phone records, and they kept trying to find out who was leaking information to reporters. And so that was something that was started then, but they stopped just short of the specific prosecution. Assange is now, they're pushing that envelope from where they were previously, because whatever you say about him, the activity, they're saying basically that what he did is when he revealed the classified information, he put people's lives at risk. I was reading something today where some media outlets were saying, well, that's what they always argue, and I that's above my pay grade. But it's a very close call between the First Amendment and the Classified Information Protection Act, SEPA. And so that it'll be very interesting to see how he, and I'm sure he will, fight it on the First Amendment grounds.
Jussie Smollett, what interesting is going ruling. On there?
Interesting ruling. So it's been, to my mind, misinterpreted, but we'll see how it plays out. What the court did was the court said, we're going to, the court file, when you get your case dismissed by virtue of the mechanism that the state's attorney dismissed it, then would seal the court file. This was an unsealing of the court file based on his statements and attorney statements after the fact. It wasn't mine, but it was one of, I assume, they didn't mention in the order, but I would assume it would be the press conference that was held outside. The court arguing, or the court ruling, that that would allow for the court file to be unsealed. I think that there's going to be much ado about nothing, but we'll see, because I don't think that the court file has got grand jury material in it. I don't think the court file would have any other things in it. Normally, a court file would have court documents, meaning there would be bail information. There would be things of the nature of orders as to where you could go, what you could do, your movement, so to speak, on bail. There would be entries as to the indictment, probably. There would probably be the criminal complaint and things like that. So absent that, I think it's a story without a whole lot of substance.
So the file is sealed. And that's protocol, but the unsealing of it was based, I guess the judge said, well, if Jussie Smollett's going to give interviews and have press conferences, then he's not worried about his privacy, so we can just open this file again. If that were,
you know, which is an interesting place we've come to in America, because the chief of police came out and does a press conference. The mayor does some grandstanding there. I think he's ex-mayor now, as of a couple of days ago, Rahm Emanuel, who all of a sudden is worried about crime in Chicago after presiding over probably the worst stint of any big city mayor in the history of the Republic. All of a sudden, he's worried about Jesse Smollett. And the idea that somehow if and the only interview I'm aware of that Jesse did was on his way out of the courthouse, made a statement, thanked his fans, and went on his way. And that is the basis upon which you apparently lose your privacy. I get it. You know, judges are elected too.
Yeah, it's tricky because in this day and age, if something's high profile in this day and age, there's a better than not chance you're going to talk into a microphone, or maybe you're putting out tweets or something. Maybe it's social media.
And what are you supposed to do? I argued this for years. You know, there is there's a U.S. Supreme Court case, Gentile versus State of Nevada. We've talked about it before, where the U.S. Supreme Court has said, especially in a criminal context, if the prosecution comes out and starts talking about the case, that your role as a zealous advocate is to respond. You're supposed to respond. Or if you want to respond, that isn't a violation of your ethics. In fact, that's part of your duty. And that case was decided well before this 24-hour news cycle was, taken a hold, and well before, I think the media lawyer, I love this line, that said everybody's heard about this case from here to Helsinki, which is a cute line. But the idea that you're not going to respond and just sit there and take it and have people assume that you must be guilty or assume all kinds of other stuff after you've had the chief of police go on a diatribe of stuff that was demonstrably false. I don't understand what you're supposed to do, but you know what? I don't understand a lot of what is going on in America right now with the criminal justice system. We talked last week about Ron Sullivan and the representation of Weinstein and how Harvard just kind of, perp walked him out of his job there as the dean of students because people didn't feel safe. I mean, we
talked about Darden too.
Yeah, we talked about Darden, and somebody wrote an article I saw after we talked about that saying nobody was connecting it to Darden. Well, they obviously don't listen to us because Darden was another example. And this happens, or it's always been around this idea of equating the lawyer with the client. I mean, back to the days of John Adams and his defense of one of the British troops, but. The idea now that this kind of back then it was a pamphleteer who would be shouting in the town square. Now it's heard, as the media lawyer says, from here to Helsinki. Just because it's a greater megaphone, I don't know that that means that you get stripped of all of your right to privacy.
I think we're having a backbone dignity problem in this country, and we're essentially having a backbone and dignity problem when it comes to parenting, when it comes to policing, when it comes to governing. Everyone has decided that they don't want to be shouted down by an angry mob on social media or outside of their house, and so everyone's going to take the path of least resistance. So I was talking on my show about I guess it was Chase Bank a few weeks ago put on their Monday morning, they have a tweet like Monday morning wisdom.
Monday motivation.
Monday motivation. And they were explaining that, hey, you don't have enough money in your bank account, or you want to know why you don't have enough in your savings account. Make coffee at home. Don't go out for coffee. You don't need to call a cab. Walk 7 blocks. Save some money. Don't go out to eat. Eat leftovers that are in your fridge. Very basic sort of advice that any grandfather would give to his 9-year-old grandson when it came to, penny saved is a penny earned. He was then attacked, Chase Bank was, by the woke left who said they were poor shaming. And then they did this. They apologized. They apologized. Because not because they're sorry. The advice they give falls somewhere between no duh, no shit. It's just basic advice. It's right in the middle between no duh and no shit. But they apologize and they flogged themselves for it because Chase Bank didn't want – it was Elizabeth Warren and some Orange County Democrat, a female who shouted them down. Anyway, they didn't want trouble. The other day, I think our mayor, Garcetti, who is usually here taking care of the traffic and homeless problems, but at this point he went abroad and he went to Israel and he said, I like the idea, you know, I think the moving the embassy to Jerusalem was a good idea. And then he got shouted down by CARE or whatever Muslim organization. And then he promptly apologized. He promptly apologized for saying, I like the embassy in Jerusalem or whatever he said, or like it's a good idea. He then promptly apologized. Everyone is promptly apologizing for nothing. And that's right. A very slippery slope because Chase Bank shouldn't be apologizing. And Garcetti, I get it. You're the biggest puss in the world, but you shouldn't apologize for everything all the time because these other people who shout you down and want you to apologize, it's like creatine to them. They get bigger and stronger. They're like bullshit monsters who just run on apologies. Like when I was a kid, you'd see those monsters. Like they run on electricity, and then they bite into a power line, and they'd get even bigger and stronger. That's what is going on. So Harvard, faculty, administration, you tell the 19-year-olds to shut up.
We were talking at the best dinner in the universe, and as Drew was telling me, he says the Harvard's supposed to be the adults in the room. They're the ones who are supposed to say, no, you're here. And in fact, I presaged our conversation, Drew, and I knew he would have the same reaction I did. The whole idea of a liberal arts education is to hear ideas that make you think, to push the envelope, is to, you know, to critical thinking. This is the exact opposite of that. It's the implosion of liberal arts and critical thinking.
The notion of apologizing just because someone demands an apology, even though you did nothing wrong, is kind of the beginning of the end. And the beginning of the end is whether you're the mayor of a city or whether you're on the faculty or administration for Harvard or whether you're trying to defend somebody accused of murder, the beginning of the end is when you just back off and go, fine, I don't want any problems. We'll just do what the uneducated, emotional, angry mob wants us to do because I don't want any trouble.
Which is exactly, by the way, why we are a republic as opposed to a pure democracy. The founders struggled with this. The last thing they wanted, because they saw it. They saw what happens when you have an angry mob. And it's almost like we've lost complete sight of what the brilliance of what the construct of the democracy, a.k.a. republic, is, which is you protect the rights of the minority, and I'm not talking about necessarily the demographic, I'm talking about the opinion, and at the peril of the angry mob.
We want to get rid of the Electoral College. We just want to go pure, just majority of everything. If a majority,
right.
And you're right. Founding fathers had thoughts about that, and they were right. And it's scary. And I've always kind of said it this way: like it's my citizens of Santa Monica. What do you think's a fair price? We're going to vote on whether your ATMs can charge a $3 surcharge, a $2 surcharge, or $1. Of course. The majority of the citizens use the ATM. They don't own banks. So, of course, the vote is always going to go toward, all right, Chase Bank, we've capped it at 50 cents because we're voting on it. Or let's vote on taxing a pack of cigarettes. Who thinks we should put $5 on to go to cancer research? I don't know. All the non-smokers do. It sounds like a democracy, but it is a very slippery slope when you start getting into that world. And it never works the other way. It's never City of Santa Monica. I've asked all the motorists what we should cap parking tickets at, and they said $2. So right. They've spoken. The people have spoken, right?
Should City of Santa Monica, should there be a shorter statute of limitations when your officers beat the crap out of us, or should it be a longer one so that you have time to recuperate and find a lawyer? Well, imagine if you put that on the ballot.
Heady stuff, Mark. Mark, thanks again for the dinner the other night. It was
Thank you. It was
magical.
It was the best couple of hours. Thanks.
I'm sorry I called an audible and got us out of the Michelin rated place with the sampler plates, but I knew I was going to be miserable, and I might eat something made of saltpeter that wasn't even a dish. I've done that before.
The bone-in tomahawk and that cream spinach, you couldn't be beat.
Oh, God, I'm drooling already. When are you back in town?
I'm coming back tomorrow. Got my surrogate daughter, Erin's wedding up in Oxnard over the weekend, and Tenny's going to be a bridesmaid, and I can hardly wait to be there to watch it.
Well, if you want to check out my stuff, you can go to adamcarolla.com. Live shows coming up, stand-up in Denver, June 14th and 15th, and my stand-up special, not Taco Bell material, of course. You go to Chassis to find out all the stuff you need, CHASSY. Lots of docs over there. Mark, let's give your stuff a plug.
We got Prova in Grand Central Terminal, also now in the Moxie Hotel in Times Square. We've got opens this weekend, the Capri Hotel with the Brooklyn Chop House. As the restaurant this year, got V Palm Springs and Casa Tropicana, Engine Company both downtown at the airport, and 10E downtown LA, and coming soon to a second location.
Hey, real quick, just because I'm sorry for pulling the Band-Aid off, but what's the timeline on the Smollett dock being dropped or opened?
Next week. Guess.
And you. Yeah. You don't expect to find much, but
not in the court file. The interesting thing about the case is that because it got dismissed so quickly, they didn't turn over in Illinois. The discovery obligation doesn't trigger until after the indictment, meaning when they just file a complaint, they don't have to turn over discovery. Only after a grand jury indicts do they. So I wouldn't imagine that there's much stuff there. I suppose the rubber will hit the road when it comes to the police department and what they do then.
So,
but they've shown they're not exactly a friend of Jesse's.
So until next time, thanks, Mark. This is Adam Kroll for Mark Darraga saying mahalo.
Thanks for listening to Reasonable Doubt. Tune in next Saturday for an all-new episode. This is Corolla Digital.